This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Here, Reggie offers an overview of the spiritual journey that unfolds in a month-long winter Datun retreat. He says that when we surrender to the practice forms of a Datun, impulsiveness and distraction dissolve, and we discover a vast inner world. This talk was given at the 2005 Winter Datun Retreat, held in Crestone, Colorado.
We're going to sit for a little while, but I want to say a few things about entering the Datun environment. In the next 2 days, you're going to be learning a lot of things, such as daily schedule, having a life that is really ordered in a certain way, protocols in the shrine room, meditation techniques. There's just a lot. And it's important to understand that all of the things that we're learning here are not preliminary to the practice of Datun, but actually they're the entry ramp. In our culture especially, we are largely governed by impulse, and everybody has their own individual style of impulsiveness. We're always looking for this little gratification, this little moment of pleasure, this little distraction, this little avoidance. And what is happening when we learn these various forms at Datun, oddly enough, is that we are moving out of the world of impulse. And we are moving out of a world of personal rituals and personal mechanisms for getting through the day. And I invite you to engage the forms. The forms are interesting because, in one sense, they're very dignified human forms. The usual McDonald's approach is factored out, where we get the food and it's in the mouth, and we're stuffing ourselves because we're in so much pain, we can't wait to just inhale the food so we don't have to feel anything anymore. Form enables us to be human beings, and it enables us to appreciate our friends, to appreciate the meal situation. And strangely enough, we pass beyond the impulse phase. And I'm not saying that that happens on the first day, but gradually as we begin to become familiar with form, we start to realize that the more space that we give life and the more that we are able to let go of our desire for immediate gratification, the richer and fuller and more satisfying our life actually becomes. So what we're doing really in this first 2 days is we are learning how to be dignified human beings, and we're learning forms that give us permission to let go of all of the claustrophobic little personal rituals that we do just to get by. The reason I'm mentioning this is the learning curve is steep, particularly in the beginning, and it's not that easy, and there's a lot to learn, and sometimes you feel a bit overwhelmed. But I would suggest when you feel that way, let go and open. Just let go and be with the form and see what it has to give you. And then after a few days, and you'll be quite surprised, you'll be very familiar and very easy with the whole thing. And then it becomes a huge relief, a huge relief. One of the things that I want to suggest also is that in the course of the Datun, you know, Datun is a time of very deep, I think, personal meeting. In other words, we meet ourselves in a very complete way in this environment. And we find that there's a tremendous amount going on with us, and all of it is actually okay. All of it is okay. If we're depressed, if we're sad, if we're happy, if we're expectant, it doesn't really matter. There's room for all of it. But sometimes we want to retreat from ourselves, and we don't know how to manage because we have usual ways of managing when things become difficult emotionally. And my suggestion is that you rely completely on the schedule and on the forms. So my expectation is that everybody here will really give it their full effort, that you'll come do all the sittings, do your rota, eat orioki, and plunge in. And every time you want to pull back, just remember to step forward. When you want to pull back, just step forward. It's a different way of working with pain. Usually with pain, we want to retreat. But in this environment, it's so safe and so protected that you can afford to explore a very different way of doing things. Step forward, open, relate to the forms, let go. Sometimes in Datun, you get up in the morning and you look into the well of the present day, and all you see is darkness. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what to expect. Of course, you know what to expect in one way. You know that at 7 o'clock, we do the morning chants, and then we have breakfast, and then we have morning sitting, and then we have lunch, and then we have rota, then we have afternoon sitting, then we have a talk, then we have dinner, then we sit, then we go to bed. So from one point of view, we know exactly what's going to happen. But strangely enough, when we know what's going to happen in that way, the inner world opens up in a completely fresh and vast and unknown way, and you look into the well of the day, and all you can see is darkness. You don't know what's going to happen. And out of that well comes the water of life, the water of our own freedom. We've been dying of thirst our whole life, and that water comes out. Now, what color the water is, what the temperature is, what it tastes like, and so on, we don't know. So it's very odd that the more we surrender to the forms of the Datun, it enables us to relax in a very deep way, because we don't really have to make constant decisions about, am I going to do this or that? Is this going to make me happy or should I do that? You know those decisions all day long? You know, okay, here's my cappuccino. I mean, do I get two shots or one? Do I put in sugar? Do I take it straight? Do I put in Splenda? Which we're now hearing the body reacts to, the way it reacts to pesticides. So it's a very complicated world we live in. But at this point, it's very easy and simple. And the mind relaxes at a very deep level. When we do that, then the person that we need to be begins to happen. It's quite interesting that the structured environment opens up the inner world so in such an unprecedented and completely, you know, we can't expect, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. The most important instruction is just relax with the whole thing. Don't let yourselves get wound up, too wound up. So I also want to let you know how I'm going to work with the day myself in terms of teaching. We have a 4-hour sitting in the morning at my request, and my intention is I'll be with you during that whole time, and the first hour we'll sit The second hour, I'm going to do body work with you. Because what I found over these last few years is that the more grounded and present we are within our bodies, the more, again, the mind can open and the journey can unfold. So we'll be doing that usually, not always, but usually during the second hour. And then we'll take that back into our practice and we'll sit for the next 2 hours together. In the first week of the Datan, we will have walking every 35 or 40 minutes until our bodies kind of acclimate, and then it'll be more random. But just so you know that, sometimes people don't know and they begin to wonder, are we going to sit here for 4 hours or is there ever going to be a break? There's going to be walking meditation during which you can visit the restroom if you need to or get some water, whatever. One of the things that was probably mentioned is that we'll be sitting from, is it 3 o'clock? Is that when we start sitting? 3 until 6:30, and we're not going to have a tea break because we find that that in the past has sort of disruptive. It's really not necessary. And after a while, once you guys settle down, the last thing you want to do is get up and, you know, have to go do something else. So just keep that in mind. And before the 3 o'clock sitting, you might have a little snack just so you're, you know, you're okay through until dinner time. And later in the Datun, we might do some things in the evening. We'll see. It's winter. It gets dark early. And, you know, there are various ways we can use darkness in our practice to develop our own awareness. Basically, what we're looking to do here is to look joyfully into the mirror of mind. The mind, the awareness itself, is like a vast mirror, and everything in the universe is reflected so perfectly. And when we look into that vast mirror, there's great joy. So even though there's a lot of hard work and meditation practice, and a lot of people emphasize suffering, the fact of the matter is the meditator understands, first of all, that he or she wants to be happy, and not only happy, joyful. Happy isn't good enough. That's not good enough. Happy is okay for some people. But the thing about happiness is it's kind of sticky. And there's a sort of kind of clingy quality to it. You're always looking for it. You never can quite find it. When you get it, you're afraid you're going to lose it. It's a big problem, actually. Happy. But joy is another matter. Joy comes on you. Joy comes from somewhere else. And the people who meditate are people who figured out that happiness doesn't cut it. And joy is the only, actually the only real thing. So, of course, there's blood, sweat, and tears in the practice of meditation. But there's also this other thing that makes us realize what it's all about. And then the other thing I want to mention is that, of course, this is something my daughter Catherine suggested that I say, and I think it's actually important, is that we are here in order to learn to live at a much deeper level. In the tradition of Dharma, meditation is not a break from life, as you know. I think most of you know that. It's a way of training ourselves to live. Many of us feel that our lives are partial at best, that we're not really fully living. And there's something in us that says, we can actually go further, and actually we need to go further. And that's why the Buddha came up with what he came up with. He felt the same way. He said, you know, this is sort of okay. Well, actually, it's not very good, but it's somewhat okay, normal life. But it's not good enough for me. I feel called to a life that is much more daring, more naked, more free, more fulfilled. And he figured it out, you know. We owe him a lot of gratitude. I don't know how he figured it out, but he did. And he's passed it down to us. So this is our thing, is we're doing this so that eventually the depth that we discover here will be with us always in our lives. So it's training for life, training for ordinary life, training for marriage, training for divorce, training for children, training for nice children, training for horrible children, annoying children, annoying friends, happy friends, sickness, health. And eventually for death. It's said that when you practice the Dharma, you actually get to a point where death becomes an interesting next step. And you actually look forward to it. You've seen so much of life, and you've come to realize that everything in life, whatever it may be, brings you a gift, that you start to realize, hey, this is the way it is. I thought, when I started this whole thing, I thought there was good things and bad things. You want to get the good things, you want to get rid of the bad things. But at a certain point, you begin to figure out, through the practice of meditation, that everything is a gift and everything is a stepping stone. And when that happens, you start to wonder about death. That's interesting. I wonder what it would be like to get sick, to get a terminal disease. What is that going to be like? What is the gift there going to be? And what about dying itself? What is the gift there? So the practice of meditation, they say it develops confidence. But it's not confidence as opposed to no confidence in a sense, or it's not confidence in the sense that power of positive thinking approach. But the confidence actually that you begin to have insight into the fact that all of reality has this quality of being your unfolding self-discovery. And the more you go through, the more you deepen and the more you find out about what your life is for. So it's a wonderful process, and it's training that will go with us everywhere, always.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.